And welcome back to Success Made Do Last. I'm Rick Tocchini. Our very special guest today is co-founder of the company Success Made Last, Mr. Timothy C. Moore. And I've known Tim since 2011. We met through the process of publishing one of our books, When Core Values Are Strategic. At that time, Tim led Pearson Publishing, one of the world's largest publishers of business books, college textbooks, and with notable divisions like Financial Times Press, Wharton School Publishing, and other divisions. Tim is a strategist and a provocative thinker and leader in curating extraordinary content. Tim, welcome to our show.
How you doing, Rick? Thank you.
Doing great. Let's start by talking about your past. While I've heard the stories of your mom and dad, I want you to share with the listening audience a little bit about your parents and the core values that you carry from them today.
Well, my dad was born in up in Northeast Texas, in a little town called Monkstown, 1926 or 28, I've forgotten which. Monkstown doesn't exist anymore. It's part of Paris, Texas now. And he spent his childhood moving back and forth across the Red River in Oklahoma, Southeast Oklahoma, Choctaw County, and Northeast Texas as they moved back and forth from sharecropper gig to sharecropper gig. For those of you out there who don't know what a sharecropper is someone who tilled the land and gave about 75% of the crops to the landowner. But this funny thing came along in the early 30s called the Dust Bowl, and there was nothing to share any longer because there was no crops to be harvested. So Dad grew up in that world. My mother is Italian Catholic from New York City, just outside of New York City, actually. And if anybody knows the old Italian way, your Italian Catholic daughter, particularly the second child, and the first child is male, you're pretty much, I wouldn't say a persona non grata, but close to that. So they're both people who came from modest means. My mother often said, though, that she was very lucky because my grandfather was able to stay employed throughout the Great Depression. He was a chauffeur, as it turned out, to some very wealthy people. Although one of them jumped out of a building in 1929, but he somehow got another gig, I guess, after that. And she used to say to me that, you know, she was poor, but there was no kind of poverty like Dad grew up in. I would say, to answer your question after giving you that prelude, that, you know, both of my parents were pretty simple people. I don't mean that as a pejorative, but they were just very simple. They kind of believe that, you know, what's right. You wake up in the morning and you hope that when you look at that person in the mirror that it doesn't frighten you from a sort of ethical perspective. And they sort of beat that stuff into my head. It sounds a little harsh, doesn't it? But
a little bit.
I think you know what I mean. And you grow up that way, and you think that that's the way things should be, and they are, and that is the way things should be. I remember my dad when I was 25 or 26 years old, in a kind of seminal moment for me. I went to high school and then college and all that kind of good stuff, and I'd done well, and I was doing well in work, and I was a wise ass to boot. And I remember Dad got in some kind of accident in a garage, a filling station where the owner he knew really well had brought him into the garage where the car was being repaired, and somehow the car fell off of the blocks and hit him and drove him into a wall, and he was in the hospital. And I sort of wise ass said to him, "Oh, Dad, that's great. You can sue him now." I was half kidding and half serious, and he paused as if there was clearly something wrong with me. And he said, "Well, why would I do that? He's my friend. He didn't do anything wrong." And I remember thinking to myself, "Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's the right way of the world." And so I guess that I think that little story lets you know what how I was brought up.
Yeah, and that is the part of the core values that emanate through Success Made to Last, the company today. And we are looking forward to all of the many interviews that you're going to be doing in the future. We've got one coming up in the near term with Stuart Emery. Why are interviews like the one that you're doing with Stuart so important?
For me, or just generally speaking, or both?
Both.
Well, I think, you know, for me, I had the great pleasure of publishing books for about a decade, consumer books, and I was able to publish 5 or 6 or 7 New York Times bestsellers, and I got to know some spectacular people. Some of those books were business books, and some were self-improvement books. I frankly began to like the self-improvement books more because they began to, they taught you about the things that matter. As you know, this the tagline of this podcast series is creating a life that matters, and that appeals to me, finding out about that. So I think that that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this with you, and when you invited me. The other thing, frankly, is I think that a life without meaning is not a life at all. And one of the odd ironies of 21st century America is we live in the wealthiest, easiest to live in time of the universe, in the wealthiest and easiest to live in country in the universe, and yet the suicide rate for many people, particularly white males, young white males, and even older ones, is shot up like crazy. And there are many reasons for that. Dennis Prager has a series of articles recently about that. But without going into the reasons, except for one of the fundamental reasons is a sort of lack of meaning. So I think that maybe we'll do some good by interviewing a few people who have something to say.
Beyond this solid beginning from your parents, share a story about a singular mentor who shaped your professional career.
Well, I had a number of mentors in high school. I went to a Jesuit high school in Connecticut. And in high school, there were two mentors in particular that come to mind. But you asked about business. I think that the first and best mentor was somebody that hired me when I was right out of college. I was hired out of Boston. I had gone to school in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Worcester.
And I was living in Boston. He hired me out of Boston and gave me a territory for Prentice Hall in Buffalo, New York, of all places. I was there for 18 months. It snows a lot there, you know. And I think he taught a couple of things to him. Maybe he meant a couple of things to me. One was, you get out of college. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I mean, I had friends who knew when they were in high school that they wanted to be doctors and lawyers. I thought that was a little early to know what you want to do. And I knew I wanted to be in some kind of information business. So Prentice Hall was an information business, but that was about it. I didn't have parents that you would call business people, so I didn't know what this thing called business was. And this is a while ago, you know, there wasn't an internet. There wasn't iPhones. My daughter once said, "Daddy, what was it like before the internet?" And I said, "Well, let me tell you about black and white TV." So Jack, you know, he just took a real interest in me, and he made me feel like I might be successful at this stuff. And whenever he was, whenever I needed someone to call, he was there for me to talk to. And of course, I was in the middle of nowhere. I was in Buffalo, felt like a fish out of water up there. Of course, if you get out of water up in Buffalo in the wintertime, you know, you're going to freeze. And so he was, he was somebody to talk to and someone to tell me that I was doing just fine and I was going to learn at the pace that I'd learned in school and all. And so I think that was probably my most important business mentor. You know, there's not a lot of, it doesn't sound like he imparted wisdom and stuff. But what he imparted was just a sense of that, you're going to be okay. And when you're young, you don't know that you're going to be okay. You just don't know that. I frequently say to my daughter, who's very driven, like I was when I was younger, and I say, you know, it's going to be okay. I can tell you that now. So why don't you stop worrying, because it's going to be okay. I've already been through this. You know, it works out. But she doesn't believe me, I don't think.
She will. But to that end, you are a dad, and you are a proud father. And one of the traditions that I've had on my past show, which I need to talk to you about whether we carry it forward or not into Success Made Last, it's the one that is personally interesting to me, because we either call up the children on another line to ask the question, or I just pretend that they're in the room. So in this case, we're pretending. You have a wonderful son and daughter. Let's take your son first. If he were in the room, what would he say is the greatest life lesson that Dad has taught him so far?
I think that he would probably, I don't know if he'd approach it this way, but he'd get there. When I was publishing books, he was probably 12, 13, 14 when I did this. I would choose manuscripts that I was publishing, and I would tell him that I wanted him to read them and review them like a reviewer would, but I would pick manuscripts that I knew that would really appeal to him. One of them was from a fellow named Kevin Elko. Kevin is a sports psychologist, one of the first in the country. He has 6 Super Bowl, maybe it's 7 by now, Super Bowl rings, and 8 or 10 NCAA football rings. He works with programs to help them get their heads right as it relates to being, an athlete. And, that book was the first one I gave Zach. And I just said, I want you to tell me, you know, how to improve this book, you know, like a reviewer would. Oh, my goodness, you know, he's a big deal now. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he read it. Not only did he read it, but 14 or 15 or 16 or 17 years later, he's still in correspondence with Kevin. When Zach was at college, he played football, and when things weren't going the way he wanted, he'd call Kevin. By this time now, Kevin is at Alabama with Nick Saban, all right? But Kevin made time to talk to him. So I would think that the thing that he would point to was that he got an opportunity to do adult things at a very young age. I think my daughter would say the same thing too, and I can expand on that notion. They're very different. I mean, gosh, you know, they are very, very different people. But they both, in their own ways, as young people, they're emblematic of the tagline of this show. I mean, they are creating a life that matters in their different ways. But when the audience doesn't, I lived in the Northeast for a long time. That's where home was. But I wanted to move to Texas, eventually moved to Austin. And I took my kids down to Austin once a year during the winter break. For starting in 1996 or 7. We'd have dinner with Jim Parker, who is an author of mine. Jim was the CEO of Southwest Airlines. And they'd sit there and talk to Jim like Jim was just a peer. And I'd bring him to the bars with me when I went to listen to our friends play music in Austin. And they both got to meet Ken Blanchard, whom we're going to go out and see and interview. Ken, for those of you out there, Ken is a many times New York Times bestseller writer, author. His most famous book is The 1 Minute Manager, and Ken ended up writing recommendations for both of them to college. But they were put in adult situations as early as 7. And as a consequence, you know, like becoming an adult was certainly a lot easier for them than it was for me.
Well, good for you, Dad, because I think that's great advice, and a way to create a life that matters is to put your children in that situation and to have conversations. And Well, we talked a lot on this show about the benefits and the downside of technology. And to that end, if your children were being raised as young children today, how would you deal with the onslaught of technology and how it seems to have taken the place of conversation?
Well, probably the same way we did, you know, 20 years ago. I mean, technology had, or had already onslaughted by the time that you know, they were, Zach was seven, and my daughter, you know, or whatever age, she got a cell phone. You know, I don't know that we did anything terribly conscious, but as it turns out, when you look back, we did do things. We made sure that you know, we didn't make sure he wanted to be, but he was on three sports traveling teams. One year he played 170 something sporting events, which may be a little bit more than
excessive,
but he wanted to. We didn't push him. I mean, that wasn't part of the deal. He wanted to, and if he were here, he'd say, yeah, Dad, it was great. But you know, that eats up a lot of your time. There's not a lot of time for fiddling around with video games and the like. And my daughter was always obsessed with learning. We didn't have to really spend a lot of time pushing her in any direction other than that direction. Now, some of that has to do with the notion of, again, coming back to putting them in adult situations. You know, one of my mentors from high school is a Jesuit priest who became a lifelong friend, and we used to take him on vacations, and he'd come to the house once or twice a year, and we'd go see him once or twice a year, and he was a scholar, you know, and they looked up at him, and they thought, wow, you know, Ollie's really something to, he's really something, maybe we should be like him. You know, all that stuff gets in the head, and the best part about it is mom and dad don't have to say very much because kids don't listen to mom and dad like they do to cool people.
Yep.
So I you know, I don't know that I'd do anything different today other than the conscious decisions, I guess, that we made, and some of them were unconscious, to do the things I just mentioned.
Very good. I want you to know that you are one of my self-imposed mentors in life, and I love hearing the stories of your old mentors because I probably will pick up chapters and layers from your past and your bibliography that's running constantly, like an old movie. And so I'm picking this up, and I'm going, you know, because I've got all these mentors that I've chosen in my life, I'm an amalgamation of all these people, and so I'm different. And I happen to have kept a book that either you signed or Mike signed that was the number one first published book, and it had the word boom in it, and it was written in magic markers. So it's probably Mike that wrote it, because you don't use magic markers. What does the word boom mean to you?
Oh, it's it doesn't mean a lot. I started doing it, you know, if you lived in New Jersey as long as I did, the phrase bada boom came to mind. Of course, The Sopranos were filmed in northern New Jersey. In fact, filmed the town just one town west of where we lived.
Yep.
But I used the term in much the same way that the Brits used the term cheers. You know, cheers means thank you. Cheers means good, you know, good fortune. Cheers means lots of different things. And I just used it in that way. It also, I used it also instead of cheers, frankly, because people would remember me. Mm-hmm. And if you're in business, one of the things that you particularly, you know, I spent a considerable amount of my time in sales, but if you're in business, you do want people to remember you. There are things that you can do that, you know, are not terribly foolish, maybe a little bit foolish. Like, but I know people, you know, that I haven't talked to in 20 years, and I'll see something of theirs on Facebook, and I'll get a response from them. Then responsibly, boom. So they remember that, and they remember it actually happily. So it's kind of a funny thing to do that that, you know, I don't know. It's maybe it's sort of like at this age now, it's sort of like an electronic embrace.
Yeah, true. I like it. I think it's a signature move. And when we have special guests on in the future, maybe we ask them what their signature is, because maybe they're just kind of marching along and in an unflavored, unseasoned life, and they need to do something like boom or cheers, you know, something to add some color, you know, put some salt in it, do something. Okay, we're talking with the co-founder of Success Made to Last, Tim Moore, and one of the things that we promised to answer today was his definition of success. And if you got 45 minutes, you can listen to this answer. But what is success from your perspective at your young age?
Well, I think that you know, I think I said earlier that we live in a golden age. God forbid that the media understood that. But we live in a golden age. We live in the most prosperous and healthy time on Earth, in the most prosperous and healthy country on Earth. The Cuyahoga River doesn't burn any longer. Air quality in the United States has improved in every city except for, I think, L.A. I'm sorry, that's not true. Except for New York, the New York area, et cetera, et cetera. And so we live in that in an age where you can do something that before you know, in time, you couldn't do, and that is you can make a living and you can do what you really want to do too. You can do what you love or what interests you, and you can make a living as well. You know, my father and my mother didn't have that choice. Their fathers and mother didn't have that choice. Jeez, my great grandfather was up here in Northeast Texas, just a few years after the Comanches were sent to Indian Territory, before the state of Oklahoma was Oklahoma, and I suspect that his great grandfather, I'll have to ask my daughter, she did the genealogy, was, you know, staring in the face of the Comanches before they were sent to Indian Territory. Mm-hmm. Because where we are sitting right here was the heart of Comancheria. Not a good place to be sitting unless you were well-armed, and well-armed with a lot of people who knew how to fight.
Yep.
So to get back to your question is I think in the world that we live in today, we are very fortunate to be able to do what the tagline of this show says, and that is create a life that matters. When I was younger, I used to work really hard to make more money, but maybe only just for that purpose. And then I realized, I looked around at the things I had, and I thought to myself, gee, I'm doing really well. But there's always going to be somebody who makes more money than me. Imagine poor Bill Gates, you know, Jeff Bezos beat him out.
Dethroned.
Yes, dethroned, right. So I, you know, at some point you have to grow up and realize, you know, yeah, making money is real important. Let's not debase that. And I'm really happy I was able to do that, and I lived really well, blah, 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 much like Stuart said this morning. But if you can, you know, do things that really matter to you and that have an impact on the people around you, how much better is how much better than that can it be?
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't say anything about the joy of, you know, raising kids and seeing them grow up and having friends and, you know, having friends for a long time and appreciating all that and having really rich relationships with people like, you know, Ken Blanchard and Stuart and,
yep,
and Father Nickerson for all those years.
There you go. I think it will be of interest as we parade these people through Success Made to Last shows, and some of them do their own series, that we have some consistent questions. And, you know, everyone's got their own definition of success. And I think as the years march on, mine changes. And
yeah, I do. I think it does with age. Yes.
I do too, because it's really a changing one. And when I was, mentored by the ball-headed, steely-eyed Stephen Covey, and he looks at me and says, today we're going to write your mission statement. You know, this is 1986.
This is before the publication of The Seven Habits as well.
Probably right in there.
I think that's 88. It's published or thereabouts. Of course, we have phones. We could look it up.
But he gives this, you know, this challenge about what's important to you. And then you're going to rewrite that mission statement every year because your life is going to change. And he tells the story of about the two lumberjacks that are out in the woods. And he looks at me in the eyes and goes, okay, which one of these lumberjacks is more productive? Is it the guy who sits there and is continually chopping the wood, or is it the guy who chops wood and takes a 30-minute break and then gets up and chops wood and then takes a 30-minute break? And I don't know, where are you going with that, Mr. Covey? And he says, well, it's the one who sits down and sharpens the axe every 30 minutes, keeps his tools sharp. Okay, I get it. And so now go write your mission statement. So part of that mission statement became one of continually learning and sharpening. And so but with absent of Stephen Covey, I probably wouldn't have thought about the importance of layering wisdom and intelligence on it. So I'm just, like I said, I'm an amalgamation of all these mentors that I've had, and I continue to grow. And I think that's part of how I define success is continual growth.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a pretty good answer.
It's a moving object. It's organic, as my wife Carla would say. All right, on to this next question. Yes, we want the outcome for our listening audience, our important stakeholder, to have a life that makes a difference. What other benefits do you want for the listeners of Success Made to Last?
Well, I listen to podcasts because, or listen to a subset of podcasts because I find voices that I like to listen to. People that sound like my friends at some point in time. Yeah, you know, like we were saying last night at dinner, podcasting is like old radio. You know, it has that immediacy.
Right.
And so I listen to voices that you know, at some level comfort me and, you know, and entertain me and have something great to say. It doesn't always have to be like philosophy and stuff, but it's something great to say, whether it's about politics or it's great comedy or whatever. So I hope people will listen to this because we just bring them people who are really, really interesting to listen to. You know, you were on the call this morning with Stuart, and you know, it's hard to get much more interesting than that.
He blows me away.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I've been fortunate enough to have been doing that for like 22 years listening to that. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, every call with him has been a podcast now that I look back on it.
That's interesting.
I also think, you know, Stuart said something that I want to bring up when we talk again today, but I think it's important. You know, you bring on all these people, and some of them are famous and some of them are world class. And, you know, we're going to bring on people who aren't famous. In fact, we're going to be interviewing two tomorrow who aren't famous. But it brings up and reminds me, you know, people read and self-improvement books, or they listen to self-help gurus, and they think to themselves, oh, I'm not going to be able to do that. You know, they're famous. I'm just Joe. And it brings to mind Lincoln's statement, where he said, whatever you are, be a good one. And I think that's the message that Stuart brings to the table, and that's one of the messages I think we want to bring to people is, you know, you don't have to be, you know, world class. I mean, you don't have to be
right,
the best at something in the world, but whatever you do, be a good one. And if you are a good one, then the people around you will benefit. So I think those are some of the things that I'd like to see people find from us. But if we do this right, they're just going to want to listen to really good people talking in an entertaining and intelligent way about fun stuff.
Right, Al. I just hope that we're able to capture a triangulated conversation with the listening audience and the guest and us, because I'm caring less and less about hearing my own voice and more concerned about a listener who got to engage with someone. So And I just redid the show with Bill Mumy, and there's so many Lost in Space fans that would have loved to have talked to him that day. And I swallowed up the agenda with Ricky questions because I'm fascinated with Lost in Space people and his guitar and all stuff, you know, Angela Cartwright and all that. And I need to have more of an abundance mentality when it comes to letting go and letting people ask questions. So I really think that that's important, because what they want to know may be far more important than what I'm putting as representing my listening audience with the top 5 or 10 questions. So I want to make sure and do that. And that's a little bridge over to, you are the author of the weekly newsletter yes. on Success Made to Laugh. Yes. And do not laugh, because it is your responsibility.
I've been designated.
And yes, you know, I think it's important for us to go on the air and talk about what's on our website. And, you know, I got up at 3:30 this morning. I'm working on the website. So it's coming. And I'm talking to people in India about doing it, and it's all coming together. But we should, without sounding like self-promoting people, I want people to know what that newsletter is going to be all about, because I think it's important.
Well, I think my idea of it may change by the time another month or two passes. Well, that's okay. I mean, as you said, you know, you're learning to grow.
Yep.
Or as a book that a friend of mine once published about the internet, doing business on the internet. I think the title of it was something like "Fail Fast and Improve" or something like that. But in any case, you know, the good newsletters out there. One, they inform you in some way, and two, they might just tickle you a bit, might just entertain you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if we are able to bring maybe some entertainment in the newsletter, if we can make people understand that we have new things coming, and maybe even provide them with some content that otherwise isn't available that may, you know, tickle them, that would be, you know, that's a modest set of goals. But the, you know, is that any different than some of the really good newsletters that we get? You know, that I sent over to you yesterday, for instance. I'm a newsletter freak. I probably get about 20 a day. But, you know, Tim Ferriss's newsletter, for instance, is one of the very good ones. But there's many others. And they just, you know, they keep you informed, and they make you maybe smile a bit, and they provide you maybe with some benefits that otherwise you wouldn't get.
I like that. I think it's an opportunity for you to write the New York Times obituary column, which I happen to read. It's like, you probably would say, why is he obsessed with death? And it's, no, I'm obsessed with tributes and well-written articles. And I go, why? You know that if someone passes away that I wanted to interview, I go, that's lost. That's a lost opportunity. We could have captured that voice on the air. You know, and you sent me that newsletter yesterday that pairs or put three people together that passed away, and they always seem to fall in threes, so people think. And I love the way there was a golden thread in there. So it's a new point of view, and you may not pick that up, you know, from a normal rag across the United States or, you know, whatever you read. So I look forward to your perspective, because you've earned the right to put out a newsletter, but I hope that it's thought-provoking and people aren't always going to agree with it, because that's not the purpose of it. So will you editorialize to some extent?
Yeah, I think so. You know, within limits, of course. But yes, I think so. After all, part of what we want to do in that newsletter, it seems to me, and I may not have been concrete about this in the last answer, is continue that voice.
Yep.
You know, you know, when you read good newsletters, including, you know, to go back to, you know, maybe the mother of them all, Tim Ferriss's, you can still hear Tim's voice in your head while you're reading it.
You can.
You really can. You know, and that's gosh, if we pull that off, I mean, forget about it.
That's right. And he's got these interesting themes like test everything, which doesn't mean he's a drug addict. He just means he's, you know, he's trying to figure it out. Okay, I'm going to end this fun show with one of my favorite questions, and it's so you, the listening audience, will get to know Tim Moore better. Every Sunday, I read the New York Times book review, and you, some of you are going to go, who is this dude? I thought he was conservative, but I read the New York Times, and inside, typically page two or three in the book review, they're interviewing a best-selling author, and they always ask the author, if you were to have a literary dinner party and invite any three authors, living or deceased, who would come to that dinner party? And so that's my final question for you today, Mr. Timothy Carl Moore. Who's the three dudes at this, or ladies at this party?
Well, I don't think that's hard. You know, an old friend of mine who's a novelist. Name is Russ Hall, and you know Russ.
Yeah.
Russ is a mystery writer and a Western writer and a very good one. And for the last 25 years or so, we have been updating separately our top 25 novels that we'll take with us to that desert island. Now, it doesn't change a lot over time, but you do every once in a while bump into something and you go, oh, that's got to get on the list. I mean, that's unbelievable. And then you have to decide what to take off.
Yeah.
So I've actually given thought to this question.
That's scary. I thought I was going to throw you.
I actually have. And I think if you asked me, the first one would be a person who's not an author per se, but wrote a lot of words and a lot of maybe, you know, very profound words. And that would be Abraham Lincoln.
Good one.
The other one would also be an author, not a fiction, although, you know, I could give you three in fiction too, but the other one would be Churchill. I've always said to my kids that, in rock and roll history, or in the history of popular music, there's Sinatra, Hank Williams, and the Beatles, and then there's everybody else. And in the history of the universe, it seems to me there's Lincoln, and there's Churchill, and then there's everybody else.
Do you plan on having anyone that you can look at the dinner party?
Well, I mean, you didn't tell me they had to be alive now. I mean, I'm in my time traveling machine here.
I'm talking about from a beauty perspective, because you've picked two real beauts so far.
Well, the third one, I guess the third one would either have to be Joseph Conrad or Ernest Hemingway.
Cool answers. I love that. Okay. I'm glad that you like reading women authors. And they've influenced you.
Yes, yes. I was waiting for that. By the way, there are some on my top 25 list, so don't give me that nonsense, all right?
Name one.
Annie Prohl.
Good. Good one. I hate to isolate 60% of our current audience.
Yes, indeed. I realize.
Okay, well, listen, until next time, my friend, we will plan on our guest list for Success Made to Last, and we're glad to be officially on the air under this new banner. One more time, our company is a multimedia company focused on unleashing your full potential to create lives that truly matter. Every one of our guests is going to be on to speak with you, to share stories with you, not to tell you stories, but to share stories. And it's our number one responsibility to you, our listening audience, to help you grow to be the best version of yourself. Within the next week, you can visit successmadetolast.com for what we consider to be a good dose of wisdom and lessons learned. Until next time, remember to continue to create a life that truly matters. Have a great week. So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban.marasine@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program.